This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 4th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 154. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, this week on the campaign trail for British Columbia's coronavirus pandemic state of emergency snap election 2020. And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or where were you when you heard the president got swabbed? In 1963, it was where were you when you heard JFK was shot? In 1980, it was, where were you when John Lennon was shot? Here we are in 2020, a year that only gets worse. After spectacularly denying and lying about coronavirus and the way to treat it, Donald Trump and the First Lady are in quarantine after a positive test for COVID-19, only 32 days before Election Day. Trump even went to hospital. It took 263 days for the first known case in the U.S. of the Wuhan coronavirus to show up in Washington State. Now it is in Washington, D.C. It made its way into the Oval Office. The number one reason why Trump deserves to be voted out of that office is for mishandling the biggest emergency since World War II. All the other reasons to vote against Trump pale in comparison. Whether it was putting blind faith in China's President Xi in January and February, to suggesting drinking bleach was a good idea in April, how can any American voter give Trump another 4 years in office? No doubt China needs to be held accountable. But so does the president of the country that has the resources to battle anything. Instead, the virus got out of control, more than 200,000 Americans dead. What American voters should do, what we all should do, is hope for Trump's speedy recovery. That's the right thing to do. And we also must hope that he finally covers his loud mouth with a mask and opens his eyes and his ears to the experts. It's not too late to save lives. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Apple Daily, vacationers jam Chinese tourism spots as COVID stalls overseas travel. Hordes of holidaymakers swamped tourist destinations across mainland China to begin the National Day Golden Week break, as people were forbidden to leave the country on leisure trips due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Pictures posted on Chinese microblogging site Weibo showed vacation crowds jamming the Great Wall near Beijing, the Broken Bridge at the West Lake of Hangzhou, and Disneyland in Shanghai. One internet user said he could not get out of Hangzhou even after being stuck on the road for 9 hours. In ABC News Australia, why the 1 million coronavirus death toll is probably much higher in reality. Professor Alan Lopez of the University of Melbourne, a leading international expert on the burden of disease, said the death toll is probably not accurate. In many cases, COVID-19 can aggravate an underlying condition. We don't know how each of those 1 million deaths was counted, as well as how many deaths have simply not been counted. Professor Lopez estimates the true number could be somewhere around 1.8 million people, and he predicts the death toll could hit 2.5 million by year-end. In the Taiwan news, Huawei's Meng Wanzhou seen wearing made-in-Taiwan mask. A coup for Taiwan's mask diplomacy and an embarrassment for the communist regime in Beijing. When she arrived at the law courts in Vancouver on September 28th, Meng was wearing a purple surgical face mask with the words Made in Taiwan in plain sight on the lower right-hand corner of the face covering. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Bellingham Herald, La Nina is looming large. Here's what that means for winter in the Northwest. Steve Reedy, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Seattle, said NOAA's Climate Prediction Center sees a 75% chance of a La Nina, which is a cooling of Pacific Ocean surface temperatures off equatorial South America.
For the Northwest, that means colder average temperatures and above average precipitation. In the Seattle Times, when coronavirus arrived, many Seattleites left. Here are some of the most popular forwarding addresses. Amid rising cases, a significant number of people changed their moving plans or temporarily relocated because of the pandemic. A Seattle Times analysis of mail forwarding requests to the U.S. Postal Service found. The most popular out-of-state destinations, Portland, Los Angeles, San Francisco, remained at the top of the list. But in 2020, spots popular with snowbirds and tourists crept up higher. For Seattle residents, San Diego was the second most popular out-of-state city, while Scottsdale, Arizona, Las Vegas, and Honolulu broke into the top 20. New York moved further down the list. Within Washington, requests to forward mail to Puget Sound Islands and the San Juan Islands soared. And in the Northern View, Eco-Socialist Party pulls all candidates from the provincial election. We have pulled all our candidates. They will be running as either independents or candidates for other parties, said Executive Director Ashwini Manohar. The new party called itself further left than the NDP and greener than the Greens. But the eco-socialists started to unravel when leader Stuart Parker was canceled for a Facebook rant supporting embattled Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling. Rowling is a lightning rod for transgendered rights activists. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
John Horgan.
Andrew Wilkinson.
Sonia First. Now,
this is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The second week of British Columbia's coronavirus pandemic state of emergency snap election 2020 is over. Nominations closed October 2nd. The BC Liberals and NDP are running in all 87 ridings. The BC Greens, however, fell short with 74 candidates. Sonia Furstenow, who became the Green leader on September 14th, talked about the challenge her party faced.
A rush to an election campaign, a snap election that was neither necessary nor really acceptable at a time like this in a global pandemic with many, many overlapping crises that we're facing. But that rush to an election campaign first and foremost hurts democracy. It means that people are having to make decisions about running in an election, literally with 24 hours to choose. It means that parties are scrambling to, as you point out, to do the vetting on candidates. It means that we're working not with forethought on how we're approaching this, but we're having to respond very quickly. I'm incredibly proud of the work that the BC Greens staff and volunteers have done to get us 74 candidates in less than 11 days. Astonishingly hard work by a large number of people and very impressive candidates across the province. Of course, this means that we had to speed up our vetting processes. But I commend the people who have stepped forward with such short notice, willing to change their lives on a dime and throw themselves into a campaign, because it really matters that we have effective representation in the BC legislature. It really matters that we have a diversity of voices and perspectives, and that's what we're committed to do, and that's what we will be doing for the rest of the campaign.
NDP leader John Horgan was in Squamish on October 2nd at a carbon capture facility, the perfect place for a politician spewing hot air on the campaign trail. The hot local issue in Howe Sound is the Woodfibre LNG plant and Fortis natural gas pipeline. Both are delayed for economic reasons. First, I asked about the continuing dilemma of holding a snap election campaign during the worsening coronavirus pandemic.
Our next question is from Bob Mackin.
Yes, good morning. British Columbians are getting their mail-in ballots from Elections BC faster than they're getting their COVID-19 test results. People are having to wait for their test results. And many British Columbians would rather be at work than stuck at home watching Wheel of Fortune. What do you say to those British Columbians who are worried about their health, who say their health in 2020 should come before voting in an election that should have happened in 2021?
Well, I know that we have increased our testing capacity significantly over the past month. These are the labs that do the work need to have more equipment. They need to have more reagent. Those are technical issues. They have nothing to do with the election campaign. I know that Dr. Henry and the public health officials that are looking after our concerns as British Columbians have been doing an extraordinary job. We are the envy of Canada in terms of low case count. Our mortality rate is the best of any jurisdiction of 5 million people in the world. And I'm confident that people's health and well-being is well cared for at this point in time. But we are not out of the woods covers for everybody.
Bob, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. You're in Squamish today, where many people are opposed to Woodfibre LNG and the Fortis gas pipeline that'll feed it. That's a pipeline that'll add 47 kilometers of new pipe. The people in Squamish who are opposed to it say that it'll pollute the air in Sea to Sky, it'll pollute the water of Howe Sound, where marine life has bounced back since the pulp mill closed many years ago. What do you say to those that'll be looking at your announcement today and calling this a photo op for greenwashing?
Well, Bob, I appreciate your point of view on this and those that have the same view. We are here at a innovative company that is working hard to transform climate action by taking carbon that is already in the air out of it. I don't see that as greenwashing. I see that as extraordinary and extremely exciting for people who care about their future and the future of the planet. The Squamish First Nation are supportive of the Woodfibre plant, as I said in the response to an earlier answer. If it does not fit into the Clean BC profile, we won't support it. And those who are concerned about it can continue to raise their issues with me and with other political parties. And with the Squamish Nation and the people in the region, I'm confident that the plan we have for climate action is the best in the continent. I'm very confident that the innovation that we need going forward, not just now, but all the way forward to 2050, is going to be coming from young people who are getting an opportunity to get training in our post-secondary institutions, because we've reduced costs for them, we've created more spaces for them, so that the next generation of innovators can have the tools they need to make sure that their future is as bright as the future that we had.
Green leader Sonia Firstenau was beside the Malahat Highway on October 2nd, where she spoke about her opposition to the LNG industry, which is supported by both the BC Liberals and NDP.
What we should be working on, and what we should have been working on for the last several years in British Columbia, was a just transition to a clean economy. And LNG from fracked gas is not clean, it is not climate friendly, and it is not a transition. Transition to a clean economy means we invest in geothermal and wind and solar, and we ensure that the projects are distributed around the province so that there are sustainable family-supporting jobs in every region of British Columbia, but also that we're leading the way in innovation and research, and that we are exporting not raw resources, but our genius, our capacity to be leaders on these files. And this is what we should have been doing for the last 3.5 years. And the NDP, along with the Liberals, chose to double down on 20th century ideas around economy and around energy, and it was a mistake. And we are here as the only party that says we need to move forward for a future in BC that does not include subsidizing the oil and gas industry.
BC Liberal leader Andrew Wilkinson went to Merritt for one of the most unique political rallies yet in BC, a physically distanced truck rally with honking supporters on October 2nd. In 2017, the NDP dominated the Lower Mainland and parts of Vancouver Island, while the BC Liberals dominated the interior and the north.
Now we have a little different approach. And we say this every day in this campaign. Our job, our role as a constituency MLA like Jackie, is to represent everybody who lives in Fraser Nicola, from Hope, from Lillooet, from Lytton, from Merritt, Spence's Bridge, Princeton. The whole riding has to be represented by Jackie. Doesn't matter who you voted for, that's your job. Same thing with my riding down in Vancouver. But the NDP have this idea, they only represent the people who voted for them. There are 5 million of us in this province, and we expect to be represented by our premier all the time on every issue, not just the ones that suit him or that he thinks are going to be popular when it comes to vote time. So you tell me, do you think it's the job of your government to represent everybody in this province and look out for everybody's best interests? So, for anybody who's asking about a permit for a truck-based rally of people honking horns in the Nicola Valley, just tell them, mind your own business, you know, you're supposed to represent us, not obstruct us. This is a non-permit event, right, Jackie? Yeah. Horn honking is still not illegal in British Columbia, just like everything else is.
In 2017, the BC Liberals promised to discount Portman Bridge tolls, but on the same day, the NDP went up them. They promised to end tolls altogether. That paved the way for the NDP to win a majority of Surrey ridings. In 2020, with the BC Liberals trailing the NDP by double digits in public opinion polls, Andrew Wilkinson said he wants to get rid of the provincial sales tax for a year.
Everyone knows that we're in a big economic crisis, and this is not a time to worry about the details so much as to get people back to work. And one of the ways to get people back to work is to stimulate the economy by reducing taxes. And that's exactly what we're going to do. As Rob has said, it's a $6.88 billion issue that comes with the reduction of sales tax to 0% in the first year. But we believe that British Columbians will benefit from that by building confidence and getting people involved in the economy like never before.
On September 30th, Wilkinson held his nightly Facebook Live chat with Surrey's Stephanie Cadieux and North Delta's Jet Sunner. He tried to differentiate the BC Liberal campaign from the NDP's.
Something that's really struck us in this election, and I say this sadly and reluctantly, is the daily dishonesty of John Horgan. Every day he says things that are simply untrue. They're often blaming us. They're often misrepresenting what we have to say. We're running a truthful campaign because we believe in a pandemic. It's an obligation of people seeking leadership to get the story straight, to be a straight shooter, to tell the truth. And it has been such a disappointment when Sonia Firston now for the Green Party is doing her level best to tell the truth and be straightforward. We're doing everything we can to portray the truth and present a reasonable program to move us ahead. And yet we have the NDP and John Horgan spinning lies, basically.
That was the same Andrew Wilkinson who appeared on the VanColor podcast in July 2019 and lied about Speaker Darrell Plekis' trip to London, and he lied about John Horgan's trip to Washington, D.C. Listen to this.
He took a trip to London to buy a hat. All business class, tens of thousands of dollars.
Is that accurate?
Yes, just to buy a hat? That's accurate. Okay. That's entirely accurate. You know, one of the last things that John Horgan did before the hammer came down on foreign fundraising was to fly down to Washington, D.C., supposedly to talk to the Americans about softwood lumber. Mm-hmm. The real purpose was to pick up a check for $375,000 U.S. from the head of the United Steelworkers of America.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
For the record, Darrell Plekis did buy a ceremonial hat on the December 2017 trip to London, but that was not the reason for the trip. Plekis traveled with Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz to meet with UK security officials and visit the Scottish Parliament. Less than a year later, James and Lenz were suspended and under RCMP investigation after Plekis blew the whistle on their corruption. Horgan went to Washington, D.C. the week after his July 2017 swearing-in for high-level meetings about forest industry issues. Horgan's spokesman George Smith said he did not go there to pick up a check. Meanwhile, it was Right to Know Week in Canada, and the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association hosted Information and Privacy Commissioner Michael McAvoy during the virtual information summit on September 30th. During the webcast, I asked Commissioner McAvoy about his March decision to give BC's government a two-month FOI disclosure holiday, which gave the government a huge advantage and put citizens and the media at a serious disadvantage during the snap election.
In 2009, when Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin was on the Supreme Court, she said that citizens cannot challenge unlawful government action unless they know about it, and that for the people to effectively participate and vote, they must know and understand what the government is doing. We're now in a snap election, it's in a state of emergency, 6 months after you made a decision that has had severe effects that have allowed provincial public bodies to keep information away from us and the media, as well as the wider population, which is being asked to vote on October 24th. The Chief of Staff in the Premier's office was the most veteran politician at Vancouver City Hall when Commissioner Denham found widespread violation of duty to assist there. And we're seeing widespread evidence of lack of duty to assist and other violations of the Act in the provincial government in order to keep information away from the public on the way to that election. So the public doesn't really know and understand what the government has done to prepare for the pandemic, to manage the pandemic, yet the public's being asked to vote, but can't effectively give a report card on whether the government has done what it said it has done. So I wanted to find out which cabinet minister, which deputy minister, chief of staff, or other official asked you to make that decision on March 18th, and how will you mitigate the damage that this decision has done? Because it appears that public bodies exploited your generosity to keep information away from the public for political reasons.
Yeah, so the decision was mine, and it was based on feedback I was receiving from staff and who are, you're hearing just on the front lines are our case review officers and investigators about challenges that public bodies were having with meeting the requirements. They were looking for some sort of guidance and in some cases inquiring about whether I'd be exercising discretion under provisions of 10.2 of the Act. And so getting that feedback and having a conversation with my team, I decided what was fair and reasonable in the circumstances was to exercise my discretion under 10.2 to allow basically that extra 30 days on top of the 30 days which are provided for, as you know, in the statute. I hear you, and you know you weren't alone in being critical of that decision, and I understand that. And as commissioner, I have to obviously make a determination based on the evidence before me and the conversations with my staff here on that matter. In terms of the, and I've also, by the way, part of that decision, as you know, was asking for an accounting from public bodies, which we have received as to how they handled those requests and where those extensions were asked for. And so that's something that was part of things. You know, if there's an issue where people, and I obviously can't speak to your specific complaints, but if there's an issue where people are not doing searches reasonably and not making the efforts they should, or in some way not complying with the legislation, obviously we take that very seriously and we'll look into issues and investigate those and make decisions about them. So that's, I think, Bob, all I can say about some of the individual issues. Of course, we have a number of your files right now that we're dealing with and will continue to deal with, but all of which is to say it's not an easy decision to make, but taking into account all the circumstances, the one I decided to do.
Election Day is October 24th in British Columbia. The debate is October 13th.
Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to, well, make that 332 virtual Nanaimo bars to all 332 people who have put their names forward in the October 24th British Columbia election. The 87 from the NDP, the 87 from the BC Liberals, 74 Greens, 25 Libertarians, 19 Conservatives, there are 5 Christian Heritage, and 5 Communists, too. Best of luck on October 24th, and thanks for being part of the democratic process. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 4th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 4th in 2006, WikiLeaks launched in Iceland? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.